So the topic of the class is Passover takeaways. Okay, so here we just celebrated this auspicious holiday of Passover, where everybody makes sure, at least tries to have a Seder. There's some kind of, you know, a lot of family gets together, and it's basically, as Jews, it's a defining holiday. It's when we became a nation, and so it's the celebration of coming out of Egypt, of freedom. But from that place of going through, remembering this event, experiencing the holiday, the question is, what's the takeaways? What do we take from there? Where are we going from here? Like, we've gotten to this place, we've celebrated this holiday, we had our matzah, we tried to stay away from, you know, there's no bread, and now we go through a Seder where we talk about the idea of being slaves. Maybe once upon a time our family members, all the way back, were idol worshippers, and we're now free. We've gone through this experience again. In each generation, we need to re-experience this. And then from there, the question is, now what? Okay, so the question is the takeaways. And where are we going from here? Okay, so today, I want to look at two basic ideas, looking at some textual things here. And from these two, we'll look at two things. One is going back to the Passover story, a little bit there, seeing some themes that are just like that are running through. And then the second thing is post-Passover, or even as the holiday, we're in the midst of the holiday, we start a new thing, whereas we're counting. We start counting something called Sefirat HaOmer, where we start counting days, which is ultimately leading us to the holiday of Shavuot, but it's a count. So the first day of Passover, we start counting. The countdown is towards the revelation at Sinai. Okay? So the funny thing about it is, just on that little note, just a side thing, which I just saw, I never had a good answer to. When we're looking forward to something, we count. We count down, usually, right? So it's 50 days, 49 days, we go down. In the count of the Omer, we do the opposite. Today's the first day of the Omer, the next day is the second day, the third day, the fourth day. By the seventh day, we say it's 1 week, and we're going up. If we're looking forward to this event, it would be we should be counting down, not up. Okay, so we have to understand that, you know, what that's about. But first things first, let's just go back to the story of Passover, a little bit of that. And something that comes out of it, there's so many different commandments that when you read it, it says, this is to remind us of the Exodus from Egypt. This is to remind us the Exodus that God took us out from Egypt over and over again. There are all these different things. It's not limited to any like one theme. It could be, you should have like, you should be honest in business because, you know, have honest scales because God took us out from Egypt. You wear a tefillin, remembering, you know, coming out of Egypt. We keep Shabbos to remind us of coming out of, like, over and over again. It's like, boom, boom, boom. So like, there's all this, like, reminding us of coming out from Egypt. But in the in certain mitzvahs, there's more to it that's brought up in the tefillin itself. So men wear tefillin on a daily basis, and in the tefillin itself, so what you have is a box, two boxes, one that goes on the arm, one goes on the head. The one on the head has actually four compartments that are separate, and each one has
I have it in my house set, you know, for my husband, and
he
knew what it meant.
Okay, so you have this filling, right? So you see here, there are four compartments. This is actually really good. I didn't realize I had this. I wasn't going to focus on this per se, but it's just to give a quick primer. So here's the one that goes on the arm. It's all one. Okay, so let me see if I can get you. I'd like to get some good pictures in here.
think I have some more of those books. Okay.
I remember it. Yeah, maybe. So the actual, what's inside are these, here, this is what it looks like. Before it becomes...
I never knew what that...
And it's made out of leather. It's made out of hide. Mm-hmm. And then it's, you have these four compartments. And unfortunately, I put on my phone today, alerts. So every time there's a rocket that comes out of Gaza, my phone is buzzing.
Oh, so damn.
So my friend Paul told me about it. He said, you know, he had lived in Arizona, and this Christian evangelical came to their synagogue and said, you know, I have this alert on my thing, and every time one of those rockets goes off, I pray to God that he should protect the Jewish people. Right?
That's
so Paul
amazing.
Says, Paul's wow, like, he's like, amazing. If this guy could do that, yes, he'd like put it on. Exactly. And so like, at least you feel the, okay. Wow. So this, you have here the four compartments, and each one has a different paragraph that's written up and put inside.
From where?
Okay, so that's what I'm going to. I'm going to tell you two of them. Well, one of the paragraphs is the Shema. Okay. Okay. So you have.
It's just a small version. Mm-hmm. I think that picture was on.
That one's in like the. Page. It's page. Yeah.
It's like page.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
It's a little different.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
This is one. I think it's the original. Original.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
This is
like
this,
yeah, those are like the nicer ones. Yeah. Okay. So in each one of these, you have. So what I printed out over here in footnote in number one, source one, is two of the paragraphs that are in Tefillin. Okay. So I wanted to look at that. In this paragraph, these two paragraphs, you have something that's it's so like. There's so much in here. It's chock full of ideas. But you'll see when we're done, one of the takeaways, like it's very practical for us. Okay, so let's just see what it says here. And there are two, so there are four paragraphs. Two I printed out for you. They're at the end of the Exodus story. And then there are two that come later, which is the famous Shema, Hear, O Israel, and V'hayem Shema, you should listen to God and do his mitzvot, his commandments. And if you do, God will bring rain in its proper time, and we'll have proper, it's like a, you know, basically saying if we behave, God will take care of us, and if we don't, then the opposite will happen. Okay, so but let's look at these first two paragraphs. The Lord spoke further to Moses, saying, "So now this just contextually, the first time that God comes to Moses and the not the first time he comes to Moses, but the first time that he commands the Jewish people." Is in chapter 12. We're looking at chapter 13. Chapter 12 talks about the idea of the new moon, the idea that we're going to use the moon as our way of counting time. Then it gives us the commandments of the Paschal Lamb and all the things that have to do with coming out of Egypt. So that's like the chapter 12 is really focused on we're in Egypt now and God's talking to us. Chapter 13, which I have here in front, is a continuation, more of like, okay, guys, for the future. Okay, so now we've just discussed Egypt and like what we're doing now to get out of here. Chapter 13 is, let's take away. The Lord spoke further to Moses, saying, "Consecrate to me every firstborn, man and beast. The first issue of every womb among the Israelites is mine." So God's saying to Moses, going forward, every firstborn, whether it's human or whether it's an animal, is consecrated to me. Now, there's going to be more limitations in terms of like which animals, etc. And then even within human beings, there are rules as to what will qualify and what won't. And Moses said to the people, "Remember this day on which you went free from Egypt, the house of bondage, how the Lord freed you from it with a mighty hand. No leavened bread shall be eaten." It's like kind of funny, like, remember this day? Okay, by the way, don't eat leavened bread. It's like, okay, all right. You go free on this day in the month of Aviv, which is the month of the spring. So when the Lord has brought you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flung with milk and honey, you shall observe this month the following practice. So now we're saying basically, okay, so when we get out of there, going forward, historically now, we're going to keep this holiday when we get to the land of Israel. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a festival of the Lord. Now what's strange about this construct is that he's saying here you're going to have the seven-day holiday, but on the seventh day there shall be a festival of the Lord, which is funny because normally it's in other places it focuses on the first day of the holidays being the holy day. Kind of the middle days there's like, you know, quasi-holy, and then the last day is also again a holy day. Here, the way it's being laid out for us is that the seventh day is the holy day, which is kind of interesting. Now, obviously, we take here and we take there and we put it together. We say, okay, we have a holiday that has the first day holy and the last day holy, okay? But here, it's very interesting that it's being focusing on the last day as being the day, okay? We'll have to see why that's about, what that's about. Throughout the 7 days, unleavened bread shall be eaten, right? Eat matzah. No leavened bread shall be found with you. And 11 bread shall be found in all of your territory. So basically, eat matzah, get rid of chametz. Okay? And you shall explain to your son on that day. So explain to him, it is because of what the Lord did for me when I went free from Egypt. Okay? Because of that, all this stuff is because of what God did for us, that he took us out from Egypt. And this shall serve you as a sign on your hand and as a reminder on your forehead. That's referring to what? Tefillin. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it shall be, it will serve as a sign on your hand and a reminder on your forehead in order that the teaching of the Lord may be in your mouth, that with a mighty hand the Lord freed you from Egypt. You shall keep this institution as its set time from year to year. I underline that because what God is saying here to Moses, Moses is telling us, is understand, this is like a continuous thing. It's not a one and done. This is a process. When you see this idea from time, from year to year, it's not like, you know, I got it done. It took me a couple of years. I figured this out. Graduation, we're done. It's not like that. This is going to be a continuous process. Because what it's really saying to us is that this is an evolution. We're constantly working on these issues. So in a prior class, we talked about it. The night of the Seder, we work on issues regarding freedom and liberty. Freedom and liberty. What are that? What's the difference between one and the other? Liberty says I can do what I want. Meaning, if I'm a slave, I have no liberty. When I'm freed from slavery, I have liberty to do as I'd like, action-wise. Freedom is actually addressing issues of thought. I have freedom to think and say what I'd like to say. No one's restricting my speech and my ideas. So that, let's say, PC would be the opposite of freedom. A person who is stuck in a PC world is not free to say what you want to say. If you say certain things, you might get killed or lynched or other things that might happen to you. So that's a lack of freedom. So what came out of the Egyptian Exodus is that we now are given two things, liberty and freedom. Liberty to do as we want to do. This is the land of liberty, America. We live in a land where we can do whatever we want within, you know, but pretty much there's liberty. Freedom today is, it used to be maybe now, whatever, but the idea of freedom is that you're supposed to be able to have freedom of ideas. And so both of those things are addressed in coming out of Egypt. But what God is saying and what the Torah tells us is that this is an ongoing thing. We're constantly going to have to work on liberty and freedom. It's not just we're always, the human condition is the struggle for freedom and liberty. Okay? So what we noticed in the Haggadah is the strange thing that says at the beginning of the Maggid, where it says, Halach ma'an yadiyalachalu avasana ba'ar de Mitzrayim. So this is the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in the land of Egypt. It says, at the end of that, it says, we are now here. In the future, we should be in the land of Israel. We are now slaves. In the future, we want to be free people. So what are you talking about? We're free. We're sitting at... The idea is that this is a constant thing that the human condition struggles with, issues of liberty and freedom. And so, whereas, you know, we might have accomplished it, only to have to readdress these issues on a constant basis. So here, you have this idea from year to year. But what's going on in this thing also, which we just read through it, but now I'll come back to it, is this idea of the firstborn. Consecrating firstborn. Like, what's that about? Like, why is that? Now let's look a little bit further, because this is actually a second paragraph. It starts out with that, and then it says the next line, and when the Lord has brought you into the land of the Canaanites, by the way, I didn't indent it, but it's a second paragraph, and when the Lord has brought, it's like right under that underline, and when the Lord has brought you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and to your fathers, and has given it to you, you shall set apart for the Lord every first issue of the womb. Again, it's back to this idea of consecrating or setting aside the first issue of the womb. Every male firstling that your cattle drop shall be the Lord's. But every firstling ass you shall redeem with a sheep. If you do not redeem it, you must break its neck. And you must redeem every firstborn male among your children. So again, it's coming back to the same issue. There's something about this firstborn. It's like really like focused in. And when, in time to come, your sons ask you, saying, what does this mean? You shall say to him, by the way, this is a derivation of where the four sons come from, these questions. We mentioned that first question. This is a second one. What does it mean? Your son asks you, this is the derivation of the four sons. Your son asks you, saying, what does this mean? You shall say to him, it was with a mighty hand that the Lord brought us out from Egypt, the house of bondage. When Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord slew every firstborn in the land of Egypt, the firstborn of both man and beast. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord every first male issue of the womb, but redeem every firstborn among my sons. And so it shall be as a sign upon your hand, and as a symbol on your forehead. Back to this tefillin thing again, that with a mighty hand the Lord freed us from Egypt. Okay, so again, it's like, so what do we have here? If we just like summarize it, it's like firstborn thing. Why? Because God smote Egyptians firstborn. And therefore, takeaway, remember this? Remember this, that God took us out with a strong hand? Oh, and where it's filling, because that's going to be a reminder. Okay? So, and by the way, the funny thing is that this is written up, and that's what they put inside the tefillin. And that was like a funny thing. It's like, here it's like, you know, you're going to wear that. What are you putting in there? The thing that talks about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, and then the unity of God is Shema. Mm-hmm. And okay, but it's, so it's like all like going, like it's a circle. Okay, so, but we have to dissect for ourselves. We have to understand. First and foremost, what's the significance of this firstborn thing? So God, the last of the 10 plagues is God killed the firstborn of the Egyptians. Why? Why does God smite the firstborn of the Egyptians, both human and animal?
Okay. Something that's very valuable to them.
So you want to say it's valuable? Okay. I'll give you a hint. So this is principle of mida keneged mida, which means basically tit for tat, or God punishes because, or the nature of the way God gives out punishment is connected to the offense, right? So if someone afflicts someone in a certain way, God will punish that person in the consummate way, in that same similar way, in similar fashion, okay? So now we're saying that God smote, he killed the Egyptians' firstborn. Why would you think he would do that?
He had the firstborn thrown into the river.
Was it just the firstborn? He really went. They threw them, all the boys in, right? Mm-hmm. But so take a step back and say, wait a second. What's firstborn? So here's what happened. God says to Moses, as he's going down to Egypt for the first time on his mission. So you have Moses on his way down, and God says to him, Israel is my firstborn. It's like he says, Israel's my firstborn. So we're his firstborn child. And therefore, the Egyptians afflicted the firstborn, my firstborn, which is the Jewish people. So now, when I'm going to give them their punishment, which they deserve for doing something because they afflicted the Jewish people, which is God's firstborn. Okay? Therefore, we call this mida keneged mida. It's like, how would you say it in English? It's tit for tat, or this is connected. Like, it's I'm punishing them based on
measure for measure.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Okay, so now, what does it mean that God says we're his firstborn? Like, what does that mean? So,
we're special. There's something special about your firstborn.
Good, okay.
There's significance to it.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So now the morale.
What makes you a parent? And it's, I don't know.
Okay, good.
God.
Okay,
but God. Didn't make him God, but it gave him a people to worship him.
Well, maybe God may be king, because maybe people accept God, then becomes, meaning as much as God doesn't need anybody, but a king is not a king without a nation, right? So God becomes king through us. Okay, but fine. Maral from Prague. Maral lived in the 1500s. He was a prolific writer, had some very deep Kabbalistic ideas that he's unique in the sense that he conveys these ideas that are Kabbalistic, but does it in a way that's not using Kabbalistic language. So he says on this, we're talking about the story of our exodus from Egypt. It's a groundbreaking event. So much so that thousands of years later, we, the Jewish people, are still talking about it, because it's not only that for us, but really for, if you look at like the, if you look at American history, and if you look closely, there's impact of the exodus from Egypt and the biblical story of the exodus that impacts how the founding fathers of the United States put together this, the Constitution and things of that nature. You have, you know, the way the blacks, you know, the emancipation there references back to, you know, there's a lot of historical, this is a major event that has ripple effects for a long, long time. So this is a major deal. Now, Maral, what he says about this issue of God's fixation on this firstborn thing, what is that? What is that about? So he explains that this idea, and this is a little bit out there, but I can't help myself. I always like have to throw an idea that's a little bit out there, but I see an idea, I need to share it. So the idea first, that God is saying that he's establishing, the whole Exodus story is really to give us more than just that God is the creator, but that he's going to be involved in the world. But the flip side is that in this whole Exodus event, he's also telling us about his beginnings, and that the God of the salvation of the Exodus story is the God that precedes everything. That's why he's fixated on firsts. If you think about it, right? He's really fixated on the first, the first, the first, the first, the first. It's all about the first. Why are you so busy with the first? Because I want you to know, I'm introducing myself to you guys, and I am the God that pre-exists everything. So everything that has to do with first, the Jewish people are the first. In the first word of the Bible, of our Torah, it says Bereshit, in the beginning. Okay, again, you're starting to see a pattern here. What's this with this beginning? So Rashi, the great Middle Ages commentator, he says here, Bereshit. Bereshit means for, it means in the beginning, or it can mean for the beginning. Or it like be for that which is first. Reshit is first. For the first, the heavens and the earth were created. What's the first? Rashi says there are multiple things that are first. One of the things that's first is the Jewish people. What does that mean? It means that from the beginning of creation, we were there. Almost like the creation was for us, the Jewish people. Okay? Now, we looked at this yesterday. I had a class that we were talking about this. And so one of the guys said there, but I thought that God chose the Jewish people because of Abraham. So I said, that could be, and maybe that's true. But what it's also saying here is that no, even before Abraham ever came onto the scene, from the beginning of time, the world was created for the Jewish people. Now, that doesn't mean that, therefore, we get special rights, we get front row seats, and, you know, it's not like that. It's what it means is that we have a task that we're supposed to bring to the world. We're on a mission.
We're the co-creators of
a... Yeah. Right? One of those things is this issue of freedom and liberty. We bring that to the world. We develop it. We work on that. It's a continuous thing of struggling for freedom and liberty. And for recognition of God and His Torah. And constantly working on evolving and trying to take humanity to the next level. That's why we see that, you know, we're pulled to that. We have our, you know, as a group, as a nation, Jews have always been at the forefront of human rights and things of, you know, causes, sometimes not always on the right side of the cause, but always trying to make impact from the beginning, okay? And so when it comes to this idea of the first, God is saying, I'm the first, you're the first. And therefore, I'm punishing the Egyptians because they afflicted my first. Therefore, that last of the 10 plagues is my afflicting their first. But the takeaway is in the future, you know what's holy? The first. Mm-hmm. So the first child, the first of the offspring of the animal, blah, 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 blah. It's always holy, it's sanctified because of, now we see the connection between what's first and straight through. First is something that's holy. It also means that the idea of something that can be made new is also so important. The idea of something that's that first mitzvah, the first commandment that God gives us in chapter 12 is this month should be a new month, and this should be the idea of following the moon, the lunar cycle. What's unique about the moon is that every month it disappears and then it comes alive again. It's reborn. How we see it, it literally disappears, and then we call it the molad, it's reborn. That's the takeaway from this from the holiday. We take away the idea of things that can become new. We always have the ability to renew ourselves and to always look at the firsts. Things begin again, they start fresh, and there's this holiness in things that are first and new. So new and first, two kind of similar but also independent ideas. And so when you see the tefillin, one of the ideas is that there's two separate things here. Tefillin sits on the head and then also gets tied to the arms. So on one hand, we say that God rests upon us, His name is upon us, but doesn't become integrated per se, but then it also becomes tied to the arm, which is a separate thing. It becomes integrally connected so that we have a relationship. After the Exodus, what the takeaway is that we have a relationship where God's name is we represent God. His name is upon us, on the head, but also we have an intimate relationship with Him because He comes tied to us. So we're interconnected. Okay.
Is there a reason why it's done in the morning?
It's
Is that like the first of the day?
Yeah. So it definitely is. There's something about doing things first thing. That's what we see with Abraham. He wakes up early to go and do the mitzvah of, like God said, go take your son and bring him as a sacrifice. And he gets up early and he goes, you know, so it could be part. I have to think about exactly. Is there anywhere where it specifically says the morning? The answer is, I mean, it is definitely something that's, I'm just trying to think.
You couldn't do that at night.
So you can, right? You can't do it at night, but you can do it in the afternoon.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that the way we do it is, again, like we try to do anything that's important to us, we try to do it right away. So it's definitely part of that. I'm just trying to think. The answer is there's for sure something that's prescribed for. Any coffee, anybody?
No, I'm good. Okay. Thank you.
All right. So, it's definitely during the day. For sure, it's a day thing, as opposed to night. You don't wear tefillin at night. And I guess first thing you should do in the morning is to connect. So that would be, yeah, prescribed for that. There's probably something in the, I'm trying to just, like, if it pops out of my mind, of in the commandment of being connected to, you should do this during the day.
So you're saying it could be done in the afternoon. Is that because you could be learning in the afternoon?
You could be praying. It's connected.
Just for praying.
But it could be learning. It used to be that it was worn all the time. Like, literally, people would wear it as, like, it was almost like part of their regular wardrobe. And then as time went on and people became distracted, because really when you're wearing tefillin, you're supposed to be in the zone. You're supposed to really be focused on God. So today we're all, you know, but there are people that still, there are some holy people that, you know, like if you go to the Kotel, let's say, you'll see people that are like walking around, they're wearing their tefillin, they're probably places in, you know, where some holy people are sitting and studying all day and they're wearing their tefillin. And that's a regular thing. Okay, so that's one takeaway, okay? And then the second thing is this issue of, from the second day, we start counting days towards the next holiday, which commemorates...
Actually, time for tefillin is...
Okay.
Written in here.
I was just looking for it. Where did you find it? In the back?
Yeah.
But it says until sunset.
Mm-hmm. I figured it has to be in there.
To be determined.
He says here, it's best to put on tefillin when arising in the morning, as if one waits till later, it's easy to forget. But tefillin are not worn on Shabbos or during the holidays, certain holidays, right? And at night. You take them off at night. Okay, so that's one. And then the second takeaway, at least that there are more, I'm just giving, you know, some of our highlights, is this idea of starting to count towards the holiday of Shavuot, which is commemorating the revelation and receiving the Ten Commandments and the Torah. And I say the Torah in parentheses because the Torah that we have, the five books of Moses, was not given at Mount Sinai. Per se, it was given over the course of the time the Jews were in the desert because they were there for 40 years, and parts of the Torah, a large part of it, let's say Devarim, the last Deuteronomy, was given in the last 36 days of Moses' life. He recites Devarim, Deuteronomy. So, but the revelation, that's the take-home of the holiday of Shavuot, where God comes down, gives over the Ten Commandments, he reveals himself to us. The first two commandments, we get it direct, which is so overwhelming for the Jewish people that they come to Moses and they say, listen, two's enough. We can't handle this. We want to hear you in between us, because getting it directly from God is just, we feel like every time God spoke, they thought they were going to die. That's how overwhelming it was. It was just too much for them to handle. So, I mean, that's hard for us to also like to grasp exactly what was going on there. Okay. So this counting thing. So let's just answer this question. So why do we think that you count up? We count 1, 2, 3 instead of 50, 49.
That's so interesting. Right? I'm still wrapping my head around that.
So why do you think, so and if we all, if I'm counting down an event, I'm not counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right.
I heard the version of it almost makes you think it takes longer because you're like to count up, it's like, am I there yet?
Is that, you think that way or the opposite?
Anticipating?
But if I'm counting 50, 49, or if I'm counting 1, 2, isn't 1, 2 easier to handle? I don't know the end point. I just know that I'm counting 1, 2, 3. If I'm counting 50, 49, I'm feeling, whoa, that's a lot of time. Would you agree with that one or no?
Yeah, but then you gain closer and closer.
Yeah, but again, but you hear that when I'm...
Yeah.
Okay.
I heard the version that it's opening up each gate was each day that you were counting up.
Okay.
Well, if it's for a good thing, right?
Right.
And you know there's 30 days, I'm just making up the amount of time, and you're getting to 28, you're really excited because you're almost there.
But you counted from 1 to 28?
Right.
As opposed to 30 down?
I think it would depend on what were you counting for, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. So your idea is that you're using the counting towards something that I'm growing towards, and therefore,
like a good thing.
Yeah, right. I think it's right. Cleansing.
Okay, so that's so right. So that's become like the, you know, the way the Hasidic, Kabbalistic, right, is that the idea of development. I'm going to use this time to get myself improved, a self-improvement time period.
And it's, there's a prayer, we say,
right,
count also.
Of perfecting, so like, perfection. Yeah.
See, the only thing that I'm thinking in my head, maybe because it's a little bit of what I know, that, like, there's a reason why you can't get married. You can't cut your grass. You can't cut your hair. Like, what's that about? That's part of the character.
Okay, well,
right?
No. So that's the first
thing. Am I wrong about that?
So first things first. You can cut your, yes, you can cut your grass, though.
You can't cut your hair.
My neighbor won't cut her grass.
Yeah, well, tell her.
Well, she's new, so I don't want to start it. But it was, you know,
she
like.
She said this, because it's fewer.
No, she didn't say why, but she just made it. When she moved in last year, you know, she had really wanted to be welcomed because they're very Orthodox. And she said, you know, who's your landscape or whatever. And she said, because I can only, like, get it cut, like, by a certain date. Then after, I guess, whatever the date was, she would have to have waited to cut her lawn. I'm just, okay. I know nothing.
No, so you can have her, you can give her my number and we can talk.
I'll help her. But people don't cut their hair.
The hair is thing. Okay, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the answer I saw, which I was never saw this before. I was so excited because it finally, like, I said, you know what, I like this answer. So the opposite of the way you had said it before, okay, and let me explain. If I start out 50-49, that's like, whoa, that's way too much. And because of that, because really in anticipation, I should count down. Normally, we count down, that's normal anticipation. But because 50 is such a big number,
right.
So what they did was they flipped it around and they said, we're going to start from 1-2 up. Because I don't feel that it's so far away. Because I'm not thinking 50. I'm just thinking 1-2. It's small steps. By the time I cross over, I'm on the back end. Okay. If I were to do 50-49, normally that's how we do anticipation. But because it's such a big chunk of time, we flipped it around. Okay. And I said that. That's the first time I saw that. I said, I like that. I like it. It works. Fine. Okay. But the idea of counting is so we're establishing now what happens at the end of the count. And I think this is, again, is continuum. It's a continuum of this idea of new. Now, two things happen. When does the count start? The count starts when we bring the Karban HaOmer. There's Pesach, day one. Then that night, we start the count. It's called Sfirat HaOmer, the counting of the Omer. Why? Because there was a sacrifice that they brought of barley. They went out to the field. They cut the barley. They brought it in. They made a sacrifice out of that barley. Okay? The law is, there's something called Chadash, new. Now, exactly when it starts, this is complicated, but basically, the grain that starts to grow now till the next Passover, we're not allowed to eat. Until the second day of Passover, or that night when we bring that Omer, now it opens up, it permits all the new wheat to be permitted.
Wait, like as of the day after Passover, you technically have to wait until the...
All the stuff that grows.
That grows.
Okay? Which is a process in time. It could be even later. And the reason I'm not
getting... Is that called something? Like having to do with food?
You ever see, like, you go into a pizza store, a lot of times they'll see something called yashan.
Yes, people that I see won't eat yashan.
They won't. No, they'll eat yashan.
Yeah.
They won't eat chadash. Okay, yashan means old. Literally old. And chadash means new. Okay? So the way it works is, the reason I'm fumping this one a little bit is because there's different opinions as to how exactly we calculate. And you can look it up. There are articles that will explain it. When exactly the growth period starts, where you have to start not using it until the next year when the Karban Omer comes. Okay, or when that day comes now, because we don't have the sacrifice. But this day, from here to here, that grain, not allowed to use. Yashan is the grain that's already passed. So let's say you have a cycle. Omer, second day of Passover. And after that day, now all this stuff becomes permitted. That's called yashan. That's the old wheat.
So it's like recycling. But that's on a label of food even.
Yeah, yeah, they have it. Okay?
Right, right.
It happens to be in the United States, most of our grain is old because we have so much. The stuff that we're using is probably from two cycles back. So it's already been permitted. But those who are careful about this, because again, there's also, does it apply in the United States or not? It might be just limited to Israel, to the land of Israel. So, but a lot of people are careful to keep it here in the United States or anywhere outside of Israel for that matter. And so they'll look at and make sure that the grain that they're using is this old grain post the Omer. Okay? But I remember, what is it called? Chadash, new. Again, the same theme. It's not like, you know, you notice, you see this, the idea that Passover, springtime, life is coming back, new. We're very in sync. If we listen to like what the Torah is talking to us, it's messaging something about new, old and new, old and new. Being conscious and aware of that, which is, you know, cycles and things that are new, because we're supposed to be in tune with the fact that like our moon cycle, like the lunar cycle, it's in the wheat cycle, that same thing. And then guess what? They call the sacrifice after the 50 days of counting, we bring these two loaves up and it's called, let's see if we can find it here. Right, so that's, let's read through this chapter quickly. Leviticus chapter 23, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the Israelite people and say to them, when you enter the land that I'm giving to you and you reap its harvest, you shall bring the first sheaf of your harvest to the priest. Again, this idea, bring the first. He shall elevate the sheaf before the Lord for acceptance in your behalf. The priest shall elevate it on the day after the Sabbath, which after the Sabbath here is a reference to the first day of Passover. Okay, that's kind of connected back to that idea of the seventh. Mm-hmm. Notice how like it focused. Remember I told you that idea that it focused on the seventh day of the holiday? The seventh day of the holiday would be equal to Shabbos, mm-hmm. The seventh day. Even though, again, so the Passover, the first day, is looked at as a Sabbath day. Okay, we'll keep it like that for now. On that day, on the day that you elevate the sheaf. Now it says elevate. It keeps on saying elevate because they're going to do this idea of they wave it. They bring up and like it's called Hanafa, okay?
The barley?
Yeah, they actually take this and the priest, the Kohen, he waves it here, different directions. Like if you see on the holiday of Sukkot, they wave the lulav in different mm-hmm. directions. It's coming from this Hanafa. I think it's that idea of...
So the sheaf is referring to the sheaf of barley.
Of barley, yes. Okay, and on that day that you elevate the sheaf, you shall offer as a burnt offering to the Lord a lamb of the first year without blemish. The meal offering that it shall be 2/10 of a measure of choice flour with oil mixed in, an offering by fire of pleasing odor to the Lord, and a libation with it shall be of wine, 1/4 of a hin. Okay, so it's basically a combination. So we're doing a barley offering together with some oil mixed in, and together with that some wine. All part of the sacrifice until that very day, until you have brought the offering of your God, you shall eat no bread or parched grain or fresh heirs. It is the law for all time throughout the ages in all your settlements. So that's the that's that law of not eating the new grain until you've brought this sacrifice. And from that day on which you bring the sheaf of elevation offering, the Omer, the day after the Sabbath, you shall count off now 7 weeks. They must be complete. So you're going to now do the cycle of 7 weeks of a whole day. So like the idea that we start counting at night, because the day for us starts at night. You must count until the day after the seventh week, 50 days. Then you shall bring an offering of new grain to the Lord. Here we go again, right? Yes, so you see, that's not the Omer. This is the one after the 77, the 7 week count, the 50th day, you're going to bring a new grain offering. You shall bring from your settlements two loaves of bread, this is called the Shnei Alechem, as an elevation offering, and each shall be made of 2/10 of a measure of choice flour, baked after leavening, as first fruits to the Lord. Okay. Now, what's crazy about this situation also is you're going to bring the Bikurim, the first fruits, at that same time, and then you say a passage that at that time when you bring that offering, which is the passage which we use to tell over the story in the Haggadah. When it says that whole thing about my father was an idol worshiper and love on that whole thing, Armi Avodavi, that's the same paragraph that one recites when they bring that offering at the Shavuos holiday, is the paragraph that we use in the Haggadah to tell over the story. So it's like all connected. Okay. With the bread you shall present as burnt offerings to the Lord, 7 yearlings. So this is basically describing the different sacrifices that are brought at that time. Okay, and this is all around the holiday, together with the bread of the first fruits and elevation offering before the Lord. When is this? This is Shavuos. So we're coming from Passover to Shavuos. It's interesting, it doesn't mention anything about getting the Torah in the biblical thing here. It's all focused on this counting and the sacrifices that are brought at the end of the count. Because we're going through the cycle, it's focusing again on the idea of bringing new and old. It's like always got the same theme, very deeply ingrained in what's the takeaway from Passover. I'm going from Passover, and I'm going to continue this counting process of growth. What's this idea of the mourning thing we have to talk about in a second? Okay, and it brings us to the idea of celebrating and coming to God with our first fruits. Okay. So now, just to explain, so now let's talk about what you mentioned something about not taking haircuts. Okay. So, in the laws of the counting of the Sphira, so pops out here. This is I'm holding here. This is the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch is Rav Yosef Cairo in the late 1400s lived in Sfat in Israel, and he started codifying the laws. There was already codification that was occurring earlier, but Rav Yosef Cairo is the one who created like that. The books over there, the red books, the big ones, that's the Shulchan Aruch, and with it has like all these different commentaries. This is a later commentary that the Chavetz Chaim, who lived in the 1900s, late 1800s, and died in 1933. So he wrote the Mishnah Berurah, which is just another layer of explanation of what the Rabbi Yosef Cairo had written in the late 1400s, okay? The codification. So in there he says, we have a tradition not to get married from the beginning of Passover until Lag BaOmer. Okay, why? Because at that time, the students of Rabbi Akiva were passing away. Okay? And as an outgrowth of that, we have this idea of quasi type of mourning where we won't take haircuts, we won't shave. Nice. Correct. So the mowing the lawn thing, that's where I'm looking here. Right. I don't see anything. It's not, you know, she can tell. You can tell her, and I'll give you like the thing. And
no,
say,
I am not
going to do that.
Just moved into the neighborhood.
I know. I'm just saying she'd appreciate it if you go Simon Tuft Sadi Gimel. She'd be like, what? I'll write it down. She'd give it to her. Like, here's my. But it's only about haircuts and getting married. But the idea of, so Rabbi Kiva's students passed away at that time. So the question is, what happened? Why? It's not just that they died, but that they died specifically at this time, and that the reason that they died is probably because of whatever they were up to, the time period defined whatever they were doing as being a problem in that time period. Because if you're getting ready to receive the Torah, so then whatever they were doing, so the Torah, the rabbis tell us that they weren't treating each other properly. They were not giving each other proper respect. So if they weren't treating each other with proper respect, it's a time where, in a certain sense, the expectations of the Jewish people is that much greater. I mean, God's saying, okay, you've gotten to this point. I'm expecting big things from you guys. Now, Rabbi Akiva was the greatest teacher of his generation, if not one of the greatest teachers of all of our history. And then his students, which he had thousands of, were not interacting, and they were like on the highest level, were not treating each other properly. There's no tolerance for that. And so there's this major tragedy that occurs. Now, it's possible that also historically, it could have been at the time the Romans were oppressing the Jewish people, that there might have been a revolt at that time, the Bar Kokhba revolt, and that the students went to fight the Romans and were massacred. It's all possible that all played out at the same time. Either way, the fact that they were massacred, the tragedy is that saying that they clearly were not acting properly and therefore they weren't protected like they should have been by divine, you know, protection. The takeaway for us, though, is that as we prepare to get the Torah, one of the things that stands out about the way the Torah was given is that we were unified as a people. And this idea of what we talked about, the idea that the Jewish people are the racist, going back to the beginning in time, that the whole world was created for us, that we are this one big soul. We have a unified soul. The Jewish people, we're all connected because we all come from the same root of, not father, but there's a soul that we all come from. We have, all share that same basic soul. It sounds wild, but like when you go into the spiritual realm, that our, all of our souls are coming from the same place, and that's what connects us, and that's how we're unified. And so at this, at the time when we stood there at this, at Mount Sinai, we were all there. We were there. So we probably, if we had the ability to tap into the depths of our soul, we could sense that we were there. And so that was the description is we were completely one. We were a unified people at the time. So part of the premise of getting the Torah is it requires, it's based on complete unification as a people. So if there was any type of breakdown in the unification amongst the students of Rabbi Akiva, who are in the highest realm of the spiritual realm of our people, and they weren't interacting properly at this time, or were getting ready for the event that requires complete unification, that's a tragedy ready to happen, and that's what happened. And so we till today, this is in the late 1400s. From there, they already had that practice, which probably went back 500 years before that. We're still doing that today. We still feel the repercussions of that. But in getting ready for that time of getting the Torah, what it's really telling us is another takeaway is that we have to be cognizant of how we interact with our brothers and sisters, the Jewish people. There needs to be unification there. And if it's not, we have to really push ourselves hard, very much so to get to that place. Just as a parenthetical on this last point, is I was learning today with Paul Farber the Tanya, which is written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. And there he talks about this idea of how can we connect to other fellow Jews if when we realize that who we are, we're souls. Our physical realm is secondary. It's what carries our souls. It's a receptacle, but who we are our souls. When we look at other people, we look at each other, we say, okay, I see the person, but I'm really looking at you and I see your soul. And I interact with you as on that spiritual plane. So that connection is on a much higher plane. We're able to connect that much, a much deeper way. And so that's where he describes that when you interact with people and look for the goodness and that higher plane of goodness and spirituality of the person, you're able to connect that much more and love them that much more. And that's where the love of fellow Jews comes from. That's how the Baal HaTanya describes, you know, being able to really connect to other Jews and to other people. When you see their spiritual side of them, the loftier side of the person, you're looking and you're able to then see, and it's easier to connect than if you're looking from a more physical place. So the two takeaways, or three takeaways from Passover, is recognizing the fact that the special relationship that we created with God from Him taking us out, the idea of the focus on the firsts and the new, and the idea of also the ability to renewal and to be fresh, and things are always fresh and new, and also the idea of getting ready for what's next. It's not a one and done, but we're constantly working and evolving and getting better and growing, getting to that place and going to that next place of connection. Okay.
So much information. I know.